This episode is being brought to you by Guide Health. You became a broker to guide clients through complex decisions, but renewals, client questions, shifting commissions, and endless admin work have a way of crowding out the work that actually grows your business. What if AI could give you that time back? Guide Health helps brokers using AI to scale their capacity while delivering true white glove service.
Welcome, and thank you for joining us for Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Benefits and Insurance Professionals.
And I'm your host, David Saltzman. Our guest today is Will Johnson. Will is CEO and co-founder of Guide Health. Before launching Guide, Will spent nearly a decade at Oscar Health, where he developed a front-row view of how the healthcare ecosystem actually works, and, more importantly, where it breaks down. Today, his company is building an AI-enabled platform designed to empower advisors and agencies with the technology, operational support, and resources they need to become true guides for their consumers navigating insurance, health, and financial decisions. Welcome, Will.
David, thanks so much for having me.
Well, it's our pleasure. Now, as I mentioned in the open, you spent about a decade at Oscar Health before you launched Guide. And for those of you who are listening, Guide is G-Y-D-E. So if you go looking for it, that's how it's spelled. What did you see in the healthcare ecosystem that convinced you that the advisor or broker was the most important but perhaps least supported stakeholder in the entire value chain?
Yeah, couldn't have said that statement any better. So maybe just some background. You know, I was at Oscar for a decade prior to starting Guide. And, you know, I had roughly four-ish chapters during the course of that tenure. When I first came on, you know, one of my jobs was launching markets, you know, so coming in and figuring out, you know, particularly on the distribution side of the equation, who do we need to be partnering with? What product do we need in this market in order to be able to enter it successfully? Largely focused on the individual market itself, but we also did this in Medicare Advantage. We did some small group, fully insured products. And so you kind of ran the gamut of the consumer and kind of small to medium employer offerings, you know, across the Southwest and Southeast, which is where I was focused. I then kind of graduated to managing the P&Ls of some of those markets. So moving from launching them to, you know, more of a market ownership position. The third chapter was leading Oscar's technology business. So I actually took the technology infrastructure that Oscar originally built to serve its own members and then helped other organizations power their own member engagement stack with that technology. We worked with both health plans in that capacity, but also value-based providers. And then my last role was leading the growth of the ICHRA business within Oscar. I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar with what's going on in ICHRA. I do think that the promise of what ICHRA could be is quite enticing, but certainly some practical opportunities for improvement, both at the regulatory level and also just the, you know, administrative level as well, as I'm sure you guys have experienced firsthand. The through line through those four chapters, though, was really that the broker seemed to be the entry point to the system for most consumers and employers. But I found them to be wildly underinvested in relative to the strength of the position that they held in the value chain. You know, and particularly when I was leading Oscar's technology business, you know, I was spending a lot of time looking at AI solutions, where the market was headed, and also where the investment dollars were going. And you saw a bunch going towards, you know, the provider and clinical side of the house. Certainly plenty of energy and dollars focused on the payers, but I saw fairly limited investment for insurance distribution. And so, you know, my perspective was, particularly after spending a lot of time with these stakeholders as a part of launching markets, you know, at Oscar, why wouldn't we channel more of the energy, both from a resources, investment, technological innovation perspective, et cetera, towards these stakeholders that really are the front lines, the entry point and essential guides, hence the name of the business, you know, for their clients with better tooling. And that really became like the core vision for Guide and is what we're largely trying to deliver on now as we think about, you know, turning on our first set of partners post-acquisition.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think the industry historically underinvested in the people who are actually closest to the end consumer?
So I think there's a couple reasons. I think one, you know, the reality is I think broker distribution is oftentimes misunderstood. And so one of the things I saw viscerally as a part of my time at Oscar, and we see it now even, you know, more so as we're evaluating these companies for potential partners, there is a perception that the broker simply just does enrollment and renewal of, you know, one insurance product. And that's kind of like the role in the value chain. I think is, you know David all too well, and presumably most of your listeners are living this day to day, that is but one part of the role of the broker. In many respects, I saw the broker as this payer agnostic platform to service clients and help them through these decisions, sure, but also the post-financial, you know, decision process itself. You know, after they pick a plan, that is simply the beginning of the relationship with the client. It is not the end. And so I think in many respects, that notion has been missed, both because it's been underreported and because I just don't know if you've seen folks that have some of the more missionary orientation that the team does here at Guide around what the broker could become if we empowered them to do so with modern technology within an organization that is really focused on making them the center of kind of our investment and focus.
You know, with kind of partial apologies to Simon Sinek, a lot of the folks that we speak to, the innovators that we speak to on both this podcast and on my podcast, Shift Shapers, they don't start with why. They actually start with why not. Was there some moment when you looked at the market and thought, why hasn't somebody already built this?
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things that we were looking at more broadly was kind of in two categories of why not, to use your terms. As you probably know, and you know, just for your listeners' context, Guide partners with agencies through acquisition. So we actually acquire on a majority basis the partners that we work with, and I align my economic incentives as a part of that one-to-one with the partners we work with. So I have to deliver for them. Right. So I just found that it was an interesting model. So we were also looking at other platforms that were kind of doing M&A. And then we were also looking at other software solutions. And, you know, I think the why not for us, you know, if we start with camp one, the acquirers, our perspective was, why couldn't we be the platform for the ambitious owner that still wanted to be entrepreneurial, but really wanted technology and resources in that capacity from their acquirer? So they didn't want to just ride off into the sunset. They wanted to stay in the business. And they were actually looking for someone to buy into. Both, but bi-directionally, them buy into that partner buy into them, and kind of ride with them for the next decade. We said, why doesn't that exist? You know, I think there's a number of different reasons, of which I probably won't get into too much on this pod, but the reason why we wanted to do it that way was because we just thought there was a generation of insurance agencies that said, you know, whether I service employers or I service consumers, these markets and my day-to-day has been more disrupted in the last 5 years than it arguably has in the last 50. I need a partner to help me navigate this market, technological, and how I'm doing business shift. And that, I think, gave Guy the opportunity to be that partner, right? And so I think in some ways it was, why hasn't existed? We might not have had the degree of disruption that we've experienced, you know, more recently. And so I think we kind of rose as a part of the why now in that first camp. The second camp, though, is I don't know if we had the technological paradigm shift that enabled a solution to exist, like what we're now delivering pre-AI. Because, you know, transparently, I've been looking at building some version of Guide since 2019. But when software only was kind of the only available solution, and most software products are kind of some combination of what I'd call data organization, dashboarding, and workflow, that doesn't really solve the true service challenge that you have in just doing work. The chasm that I think AI is now helping to cross for many of these services industries is the ability to quite literally do work on behalf of the client. Now, as we think about it, that allows much more time for the clients to have richer, more contextualized conversations, you know, the broker rather, with those partners that they serve, consumers or employers, and ultimately help them expand services well beyond what they're able to accomplish today. That just didn't exist. So I think the why not was probably not a knock on any of the prior entrepreneurs that have come on your pod. It was actually much more just a timing thing. And so what we saw was we have meaningful market disruption, you know, a capital markets infrastructure, you know, with partners like, you know, Lightspeed and Optum Ventures, et cetera, that would reward and be willing to partner with an organization like ours, and a technological paradigm shift that was, you know, software to AI all at the same time. Very rarely, you know, do you have all three of those dimensions going on at once. And, you know, on any objective measure, and I've talked about this in some other forums, but, you know, I've got a 13 and a half month old and amazing wife who's been a part of this journey with me. When we started Guide, it was like, I think Liam was like 2 to 3 months old. So objectively speaking, maybe one of the worst times to be starting a company, but I was like, you know, look, honey, I don't know how to tell you this, but we're never getting all three of these things checked off at once. We got to go right now. And that was kind of what it was. So in some ways, I think it's a combination of both of those, both in the, you know, what was happening in the market, you know, what was going on from a technological paradigm shift perspective, and then the role we could play on a more, yes, commercially oriented basis, sure, but on a more missionary oriented basis in terms of transforming the way that the business and the industry works. I just didn't think there was a better time than right now.
You know, it's interesting. A lot of brokerages have staff and teams that they've had for years and years and years. And when they hear the word acquisition, the first thing they think is, oh my God, my people are going to be out of a job. Yeah. You guys have kind of taken a different tack on that and more empowering local teams. Talk about how you do that and why it's so central to what you guys do.
Yeah, and maybe I'll start with like some of the conversations I have with agency owners as part of the diligence for Guide. So I probably talked to 100 agency owners that had gone through an acquisition prior to starting Guide. And David, I will be perfectly blunt. There was only one that had a neutral thing to say about the experience. The other 99 hated it. And the reasons why were largely threefold. One, they didn't seem to get any resources post-acquisition. Two, the reporting requirements. So their own administrative load and burden actually went up, which was kind of hilarious. And then the third was they were like, they largely incinerated the team, you know, shortly after or through some duration post-acquisition. And for some background on me, you know, I grew up with grandparents that were small business owners in Savannah, Georgia for 40 years, largely in the restaurant industry, which is, you know, frankly, a much tougher category than most. So, you know, their EBITDA margins don't quite look like many of the P&Ls we see today. So, you know, trust you guys are in a good space for all the listeners out there. But they would show up at, you know, 4:30 in the morning, 9 p.m. at night, every single day. You know, restaurant business is a 7-day-a-week job. And what you found is these businesses and the teams that they've assembled become like members of the family. And so in many ways, disrupting that is not only, I think, corrosive to the communities that these people operate in, but oftentimes it's not good for the companies. You know, I think in many respects, every business has been built in some ways in similar fashions, but in others in highly unique ones, right? There's local dynamics that you just can't appreciate if you're, you know, someone that's not in that market. Every entrepreneur has their strengths and they kind of build teams around those. So my perspective was, what if we could be the technological engine of these teams, but allow them to do what they were already doing that made them great, but just more of it? And so in many respects, the things that we try to say is, hey, I'm not here to change anybody that is sitting in the car. I just want to give you a new engine and occasionally a new paint job if they want it. And so that's kind of been our motion. You know, I think that is a fairly unique one. But my strong perspective is that the shift in the technology capabilities that we're now seeing allows for some of this to occur. And I think if you're partnering with the right owners and teams, your number one job should be to treat them as the customer and to figure out how you 10x their capacity, their ability to serve more, and their ability to ultimately help manage the local economies and businesses that they serve and help those industries thrive. You know, in many ways, I think that the broker is oftentimes not appreciated enough for the positive impact they can have on local economies and those communities, because what? Every dollar saved that the broker can help generate and every employee that's retained, consumer that's staying out of a bad healthcare episode, ultimately is net beneficial for the local economies that these folks work in. And I think it's important to try to preserve that to the extent possible. You know, I saw it firsthand.
You know, we've talked a little bit about AI and technology, and obviously you guys bring a lot of that to your partners. What kinds of administrative burdens or operational challenges are you trying to focus in on to remove from the advisor's daily life?
So, a couple of things. What I saw firsthand, particularly as these markets are becoming increasingly what I call liquid, right? Like you're seeing way more 15 to 20% rate increases year over year than we ever had before. Far more kind of benefit and commission disruption. You know, everything that largely made up the Q4 period for an agency is different now. So the thing we started with initially was like, hey, can we just automate the renewal process? Right? Can we get the producers actually focused on producing? Can we get the agency owners that are selling Medicare Advantage, for example, to not have to spend the entirety of AEP simply calling their 1,000 clients and just find ways to allow them to get back to growth? that's something that we were watching in the industry is a real challenge because these agencies were hitting the point of capacity limitation. Sure, they could go buy technology solutions, but they're coming out of pocket for those capital investments. And oh, by the way, there's not a team of folks that are helping them implement, you know, AI in their environments. I'm going to talk about that in a second. And so for us, we just found that that was like a highly accretive way to just show up on day one and add value to a partner. Let's just help automate the renewal process, whether it's employee benefits, Medicare Advantage, individual, et cetera. The second is client service. You know, if you're talking to an AM, the last thing they want to be doing is spending all of their day clicking through spreadsheets, carrier portals, et cetera. And the third is just supporting cross-sell and what I call breadth of service expansion, which is like what every single agency owner is dying to do. And every single one says, I just can't, because they largely don't have the capacity and comfort to be able to do it. And so we believe that we can bring technological solutions to that. We're already seeing the fruits of those labors in some of our initial kind of launch clients and partners. And so it's been really exciting to both have a thesis that those are some areas to focus on, and that play out in real time is something that's valuable to those partners and, of course, Guide and our employees and investors. On the point of AI, the thing that we see that is most prominent, though, sure, we're solving all those problems, yes, but like I think the thing we're really solving for is I'll go to conferences, I'll meet with agency owners, and I'll say, you know, hey, how many of you all have used some consumer-facing AI application, ChatGPT, Claude Gemini, whatever is consumer? You know, almost everybody's hand goes up, or at least a majority of the audience. I then say, how many of you are using AI in your business to create net positive ROI for your P&L, your internal teams, and or your clients? I rarely have any hands stay up. And so a lot of what we're doing, David, is just helping folks apply AI to their business in a way that is non-disruptive, accretive, and something that is actually feasible for the time of year in which they're doing it, because we don't just bring the tech, we bring the people. You know, I think in a lot of respects, we're both a high touch and high tech organization, and it's our intention to not just give an AI platform to the partners and say, hey, good luck, go figure it out. I devote people, dedicated staff team members from Guide's kind of core platform to our partners to sit with them day to day and figure this out in the trenches together. And that's an important part of the model.
Now, I saw a study not too long ago from the Industrial Performance Group that advisors spend less than 60% of their time actually selling or advising clients, with the rest obviously consumed by compliance, administration, regulatory nonsense, and all of that stuff. How big a problem is that, and what kind of a lift are you finding once you are partnered up with an agency and providing these kind of tools for them?
So the short answer is it's an enormous problem. You know, one of the running lines is producers don't produce, agents don't sell. You know, like it's almost like the reason they got into the business or the thing they like doing inherently is not the job. And, you know, I think that is a huge problem, not only for the industry, but I think for the country. You know, much like I said earlier, I actually think that the fiduciary and economic value a great broker can provide is sometimes lost in the narrative on, you know, commissions or what have you, that I think have been, you know, unfortunately, a big focus of the conversation. It's less so about how they're actually getting clients into better products on a consistent basis and allowing those cost savings for the business or the consumer to be reinvested into something else. That's not talked about very often. What I would say generally, though, is folks really like that model. And I think, David, if you think about what we were solving for initially when we were doing the research, this came up pretty frequently as the number one challenge. I spent my entire entrepreneurial bet on my ability to advise clients, sell more business, be an entrepreneur, grow the company. And what am I doing today? Stuck in my inbox, swimming through spreadsheets, trying to find that PDF. That's just not where a broker is highest leverage. And so we're trying to get folks back to a place where, as we like to say, playing offense. You know, it's in our corporate values right there on the website. We're on offense all the time. Our job is to get you out of the defense, out of the defensive state that many folks I find are in, and back into a state where we're playing offense together, guys. Like, let's go.
Well, you know, there's an added value that maybe is not so readily apparent on the face of it. Brokers today, as you know, and pretty much everybody listening knows, are facing increasing fiduciary expectations, ERISA exposure, even litigation risks. How does having better infrastructure and technology help them protect themselves and demonstrate best practices?
So if I think about like the three-legged stool of the brokerage business, right? You know, growth, retention, client service, compliance. I think we've been in a state of pick two for far too long. And so I think our perspective is, if you can help to automate some of the components of those legs of the stool, all of a sudden we move to a difficult decision of which two to, hey guys, we're doing all three. And so I think in many ways the paradox, I think, of all the regulation, which in some ways has had a lot of well-merited incomes around getting folks covered, increasing the degree of products that are available to consumers and employers, has had the net negative consequence that the degree of administrative burden on the broker or the employer or consumer has gone up a lot. And so you got to find ways to get both of those dynamics in a place where they're manageable. You want the product innovation and choice, selection, interesting offerings to be available for those that are seeking different solutions. But you can't do so in a way that it totally buries both the employer, consumer, or the broker servicing them as a part of offering those products. So I think it's got to be a both, not an or. And I think for too long, we've been in an or situation.
You know, I'm interested. You've described advisors as evolving into something broader, maybe like a central guide for consumers across insurance, health, even financial decisions. What does that future advisor actually look like?
Yeah. So I think, the individual that's servicing, a consumer lines focused individual, whether that's, Medicare Advantage, individual under 65 or those that are servicing, a commercial or kind of an employee benefits profile, each have kind of like unique dynamics here at play that are slightly different, but I'll just talk about this kind of broadly. We look at a lot of P&Ls as a part of our, day-to-day, right? We're trying to find partners. And as a part of that, you got to look at their P&L to, value the business. I have yet to find a broker's website where only one product is listed on it. In fact, David, there's oftentimes 5 to 10 products. However, when I look at the P&L, it's like 99% one thing. And in many ways, it's not because the broker likes that. They've been told to cross-sell by everybody and their mother. And as one of my investors likes to joke, there's never been a McKinsey study on a brokerage business that hasn't included the term cross-sell more often. And they're exactly right. So it's not like this is something like super novel. But the challenge and the why behind it, or the why not, if we want to use your framework from earlier, is largely because there's just been no capacity or comfort to do anything beyond that core line. So our job is to say, hey, look, if I can free up your capacity to service that core line, could you be doing more life insurance, right? Could you get into wealth products? Could you become a larger part of that member's healthcare journey if a platform like us could enable you to do so in partnership with payers? Can we even expand the role of the broker and we move away from the conversation of, basis point adjustments to commission rates to how can we partner to improve the system together with payers, providers, et cetera? That to me is a far more interesting conversation to be had. And I think we can do it if we enable folks to have the opportunity to do so. So that's largely what we mean. It's expansion of insurance services, but it's an expansion of line of business service in general that I think gets us so excited.
But that kind of diversification is indeed also a great hedge against companies' decisions to lower or eliminate commissions altogether. The more different avenues that you're pursuing, the more anyone has control over you.
Totally. I mean, for anybody that's doing Medicare Advantage right now, you've seen a lot of disruption over the past, 12 to 18 months. I don't think that's going to stop in the next 12. And so I both think it is an existential threat to their business to only be selling one product and to be completely contingent on that one product. But two, David, I would actually argue it is a fiduciary duty that they have to learn more about other solutions for their clients. Because look, the reality is if the carriers aren't making money, we as the broker community cannot make money either. We're all kind of in this together. I was with a carrier. I have empathy for the broker side, so I see it both ways. The carriers aren't making the dollars they used to in Medicare Advantage. The reality of that business is you're going to see what I would call an unbundling effect occur very shortly, which is for years, we've been in an order-taking state where the products were very rich. They included lots of benefits on top of the base major medical product. I think the reality is that's just going to go away. So whether they, you know, remove some of those benefits that were included historically in these products, or they kind of, you know, lessen the richness, for lack of a more eloquent term, of the core benefits, what it means is the broker is going to have to be positioned as a key guide to solve and fill those now vacant or very pressing coverage gaps for these consumers. That is where Guide, I think, can be an empowering vehicle for the broker to say, hey, I've got a solution for you. Here's what it looks like based on your unique situation. And oh, by the way, if you do this really well, it can also be economically accretive to you as the broker. And so I think all parties can win, the payer, the end consumer, and the broker, if we're all leaning into this reality and just kind of accepting it and being excited about what that means for the future versus being pessimistic.
We've got just a couple of minutes left. I'm interested, you know, Guide is relatively early. You mentioned that you're about 8 or so months in, and you have a few acquisitions already completed, but put on your magic cap here. And if you're thinking 3 to 5 years down the road, what does success look like for Guide and also for the advisors that you're supporting?
I would actually focus on the latter first. I think that success for us is primarily centered on a couple key metrics. One is I want a crazy high NPS from the owners we partner with. I want those owners going into every conversation about Guide saying, you know what, they really helped make my business better. And then metric number two is high NPS from the clients. I would love to see an NPS that's even higher on behalf of the clients than before when Guide came in. Because in many respects, if we can't hit those two, we're not doing our job and fulfilling our promise to these owners. You know, like my, you know, oath that I have to them is to give them access to the market's leading technology and the market's leading team. And if we do that successfully, we should create an absolutely promotional base of owners and their teams, right? I want the team NPS to be going up as well. So you probably call that three metrics. And their clients should have an even stronger, more comprehensive experience as a part of a relationship with us. So like, sure, you know, someone might talk about economics or, you know, how many markets we're in. That's not necessarily my key focus. My key focus is, are we delivering for the owners, their teams, and their clients? If we're doing that, the rest is going to take care of itself.
What a fascinating conversation, and very, very quick. We could talk for a long time about the stuff that's coming, but unfortunately, we're out of time. Will Johnson, CEO and co-founder of Guide Health. Will, thanks for a great conversation.
Thanks for having me, David.
You can have the Healthcare Happy Hour podcast downloaded automatically by subscribing on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also find a link to the podcast in the member-exclusive Washington Update, published on Fridays. For more information on our government affairs efforts or to become a member, visit nabip.org.